Checking in again with State Representative Jackie Chan of Quincy for a discussion on the coronavirus pandemic here in Massachusetts and in Quincy and how it's impacting us. Chan, Jackie, nice to see you again.
Good to see you again virtually, Joe. It's another week. I think it's May 12th now, feels like.
That's where we're standing at, yeah, right now. And we're looking at, possibly to start some new guidelines for reopening next week. What did you think of the governor's plan?
It's actually not dissimilar to other plans around the world, actually. The governor's following a very similar processes to everybody else. And the working group he set up has met 44 organizations and still more to come on discussing safe ways to reopen. We don't have details regarding which types of businesses fall in which category of opening. I'm sure as soon as they announce that, everybody wants to move categories. It's just the nature of people to want to try to figure out where they fit in. Obviously, we all want to get back to work as quickly as possible and try to meet some level of normality. But health and safety comes first. And one of the things that's happened because of the essential services being opened, I think we have some guideposts now associated with what businesses should be expected to do, such as the plexiglass in front of the cash register, limiting people in your stores, social distancing in front of lines, proper care and protection for both the employees and the customers that come. So I think there's already some lessons learned already that can be applied in the second half of the COVID curve. I'm not saying it's over. I just refer it as the other end of the curve. And it seems to be a fairly reasonable approach in terms of a level of risk, a higher risk level of exposure to employees and individuals you're serving will largely dictate, I think, what phase you're in. And of course, if there is a massive spike in infection and sadly death, people should be prepared to accept the fact that we need to reverse course if that happens. So like I say over and over again, it's up to personal responsibility. If we do our best to do the right things, to keep ourselves safe, to keep our customers safe, to continue the work we're doing now on proper healthcare among ourselves in terms of sanitation and social distancing, we can stay open longer. And I think that's the message, is that if we all do our part to reduce and prevent the spread of the disease, business can operate at some level safely. But it only takes one or two really bad actors to screw it up because of the speed of the infection. It's 2.5 to 3 people that can be infected by one individual. So that's why abundance of care as we work in businesses is critical. And I think the governor has emphasized, but I will emphasize here, that for us to stay open, it's largely dependent on all of us to practice all the proper hygiene we're talking about, practice social distancing, be patient with people, and take enormous care about how you conduct your business. Because it only takes a handful of folks. You look at Korea, they have a spike infection of 80 people from nightclubs. They shut down a nightclub district as they were doing the phase reopening. They might be going backwards if they cannot contain and trace these 80 people. Each of these people have infected potentially 2-3 people at a time. It was caused by one individual that infected 80 people. China is looking at other spot infection cluster of 17, 18 people in Wuhan, China again, and they've implemented again the tracing program and locking it down. We do not want to find ourselves in that position because of the high infection rate. So obviously we want to get back to work. I share that feeling with everyone. And everyone's going to probably have their own opinion about who opens next and their safety of the category or the phased in. But I think people need to understand and do not underestimate the contagious nature of the disease and how quickly it can spread. And only we can prevent the spreading.
Do you think that once a vaccine is developed, then some of the guidelines can be relaxed, or does that have to continue?
Well, it's two things that they're talking about on the news constantly, right? One is whether we achieve herd immunity, where we have a natural antibody development that allows us to fight the disease, but we don't know if that's a permanent solution or a temporary solution to fighting disease. Our body does relax itself from fighting diseases if it doesn't have to fight a disease anymore. It'll stop remembering how to fight a disease. That's why we have vaccines, and we have boosters for vaccines to keep reminding our body that this is a disease that we should continue to be in the vigilance for to fight. If herd immunity exists, which means that there's a sufficient percentage of the population that is immune, that shields the remainder that isn't immune from contracting the virus, I mean, we can return to a closer norm. But a vaccine or proper therapeutic care that we know will work is the final solution to returning to life to what was before. That being said, you don't know what's going to happen next. Does the disease mutate? Will there be another respiratory disease of a similar type of the coronavirus coming down the road? We don't know. But all we can do is try to, you know, do what we can now and work our way through this a little bit at a time. People who are going to get impatient and potentially put people at risk only sets us backwards. So, you know, from the very onset, it's a personal responsibility. We didn't implement martial law. I don't think people understand what martial law looks like when people arrest you on the street and bring you into your home and drop you off or put you in jail like you do in Russia. China's lockdown prevented anybody from traveling at all. Italy, people in their homes. France were issuing citations on the street. They're still breaking up public gatherings in European countries. You know, sometimes less friendly than just saying, please move along. So this has been very much a voluntary effort in the United States. And we're asking people to take personal responsibility here.
Have you been surprised, Techie, at the death toll here in Massachusetts? Is that kind of, you know, what was anticipated, or is it higher or lower? Do you know?
Well, at the onset of this, my statement to everyone was that if we keep it to 2,500 or less, that's considered a win. And that didn't happen. And this revolves around testing again. So the more we test, the more we know if you were directly related to the disease of your death and hospitalizations. That's why the test counts around the world are a little bit tricky to understand. So as people have heard from Mayor Cuomo, they believe they've undercounted the deaths because that doesn't include people that died at home. So if you died in route or you died at home, you know, I'm sorry to tell people this, but a test kit right now helps the living. Given the fact at the time of the crises in New York, they didn't have a lot of test kits available. So honestly, you got to use a test kit on someone that's alive to try to save a life, to identify a treatment, or you're going to use someone that's passed away, which doesn't really help the person that passed away.
Right.
And we, you know, I personally believe, and given what we see in New York and other countries right now, that there is going to be a level of undercounting. So do I think the death rate is going to be this high? I'm not an immunologist, so I can't tell you if I expected this, but I expected that the longer this went in the infection rate going up, the death rate would follow the infection rate.
Yeah. I'm concerned at all about, you know, long-term effects. I mean, there's going to be folks that are deferring treatment for other issues because they're afraid to go to the hospital. There's going to be, you know, stress-related, anxiety-related, mental health-related issues. Who knows for how many years to come after this?
No, agreed. I mean, trust me, I'm suffering the same stress as everybody else that's listening. I've been in the same position as well. I looked at my calendar and didn't realize the last time I was in Boston was March 17th. And we've pretty much been shut in since that week. So, you know, there's that unusual situation where we are now afraid of our neighbors because our neighbors could be carriers. It's a very unusual feeling. And we're brought up as a society and as a people where people run to help other people. We can't run to help other people because you could be putting yourself at risk that will put you in a position not to help you. It's like the whole thing in airplanes. So they tell you to put your oxygen mask on first.
Right.
Because if you're able to breathe, you can help the person next to you put their mask on first. But their instinct is that we got to help you before you help me. I think the majority of us think that way, but this is kind of different. I have to be able to help me keep myself safe so I can help keep you safe.
Right.
And that's going to create a lot of anxiety among us and how we socialize and spend time with people. And yes, there are going to be mental health issues. My Facebook has a lot of information about mental health and domestic violence hotline numbers that are valuable to all of us. And try to maintain a degree of physical activity and proper eating, and try to get your mind off the coronavirus with alternative news out there. Well, not alternative news, more like alternative entertainment, I think.
Right.
But it's going to continue after this is over. Physically, I've seen on the news, and I think others as well, that this is like a very nasty, nasty pneumonia flu. The body still needs time to recover after you get out of the danger zone. That can still take weeks, depending on the circumstance. And then even that, you have a mental health impact because you've just been wiped out. And I mean, I've already heard of friends who are under respirators with COVID-19, and their family and loved ones have also passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And you weren't there for them on their, you weren't there to say goodbye. And there's that psychological component too.
Right.
So, I think there's going to be a lot of challenges for all of us associated with the impacts on us physically, mentally, not just economically. I think people are very focused on the economic part, which is very important. But there's also that mental aspect that follows on that as well.
Yeah, I remember last time we talked, actually, you were going to try a full meeting of the House virtually. How did that go?
Well, we had some technical problems, no surprise. So the way we did it in this formal session, which we're actually having another formal session tomorrow, as well as our Democratic caucus tomorrow, is that we have people that are in the House, members that are in the House and House leadership, and each leadership person gets 20 members on the phone, on the conference call, and oversight. And we have to identify ourselves by our phone number that pops up on the other side of the system. So to confirm it's our number, and they have to confirm that we are there on the phone talking to the leader, the monitor, the leadership person that's the monitor. And once we have confirmation that we are who we are, because they can tell by us talking that we know who we are, we can proceed with the session. And everything's much slower because you have to record your voice by vote. And it's tallied and then submitted to the clerk, and they have to tally it into the computer system, which is the voting machine. And then there's also a 45-second delay on the website from the actual session.
Hmm.
So we'll watch the website, but it's all delayed 45 seconds. So even on the conference call, because they are within 2 seconds or less delay because of the phone line, we're seeing 45-second delay. So they're asking stuff that we actually haven't seen yet. Yeah, this is not something that I think people think about very much, about time delay. We work in television or radio regularly. Even the delay is not that severe.
It's typically 7 seconds, yeah.
That's correct. You watch the news, the social distance news. You're right. It's not that bad. 45 seconds is a long time.
Yep.
So during speeches, via the phone and other stuff, they're going to have to reevaluate the timing. So on the live portion, people in the chamber have to wait before initiating the other side to start their speeches. So it's like a weird choreography problem, right? You got to be able to let people know when to go. Otherwise, you get feedback, which is what happened last time. The feedback, which causes problems to understand what's going on while we're watching the session. And, make arrangements of how to ask questions and other things. And they need to have to install some separate phone lines also into the chamber for the monitors. So members can call from a landline into the chamber if they have a separate issue that isn't part of a conference call. So we're trying it with texting into the chamber also. So we're going to try this again tomorrow. I suspect there'll be other kinks in it, and we'll just keep working our way through it.
Yeah.
So tomorrow we're going to enact the bill that I talked about last week about short-term borrowing,
mm-hmm.
to authorize short-term borrowing to next cycle. We collect our July 15 tax returns for fiscal year 20, we can pay off those short-term programs to get through fiscal year 20. We're going to engage in a caucus to discuss an information technology bond bill. Given the current virtual circumstances, I don't know if people realize, but we do not have the best technology in the House of Representatives and the Senate, nor do we have the best in many parts of our government. We are a state that has not made that massive investment in that area in recent times. Like, I only got Wi-Fi less than 4 years ago.
Wow.
I mean, and the state house is a concrete building with a lot of granite and steel and marble, and it's actually pretty tricky to do Wi-Fi. So we're going to be discussing again about doing some kind of a bond bill for technology as part of the long-term issue associated with remote work.
Can we talk a little bit, Tacky, about the MBTA? There's been some, dire predictions about the fiscal stability of that agency going forward. So, what do you think?
Well, the MBTA budget's composed of multiple components. So I think people don't realize it's not driven by fares 100%. Fares are actually a significant portion, but it doesn't represent the majority of the funding. A lot of the funding actually comes from the federal government as well as the state sales tax. They get one penny of the state sales tax. So the 6.25% sales tax, one penny of that goes to the MBTA, 1%. And then they get the assessments against the cities and towns, plus they have advertising dollars, as you've seen in the T and the billboards and all the other stuff. And then they have the fares. And like I said, the fares isn't the super majority of the code. So it's largely subsidized by everything else. So if you were paying private sector costs for the MBTA, you wouldn't be paying a couple bucks a ride. You'd be paying like $15 a ride, one way on the T. It gives you the size of the subsidy. So the T's challenge has always been the same as everywhere else. Your costs continue to rise. You have to pay for utilities, which is the biggest user of electricity in the state. They have to pay, obviously, workers' fees costs, bond costs, transportation, and the bonding comes with debt service, and so forth and so forth. And even though some of the other revenues, like the Fed dollars, have been fairly consistent, even during this pandemic, the sales tax dollars are not there. People are not paying sales tax right now because of lack of purchases. Even though online is required to pay a sales tax in Massachusetts, it's still not in the volume. And of course, ridership is down, which is still a portion of the services, the T. And with the continuation of social distancing, and obviously as we talked earlier about the psychological impact of COVID-19, MBTA ridership, I don't anticipate to be growing a whole lot rapidly until we get to a more secure situation for all of us on getting around. So the federal government did provide us some funding as part of the stimulus package, the $2.2 trillion stimulus package. I'm not entirely sure yet when we're going to get the disbursement. I'm not sure if that disbursement is going to go to the T yet. The governor and the legislature hasn't quite made a determination of that. So right now, the budget shortfall is real. They had a shortfall going in. The shortfall continues to grow. And also with the new safety implementations, they're going to have to increase manpower to sanitize the trains much more frequently. You saw in the news, we were up to, 40 plus MBTA employees have gotten COVID-19, if not more, as well as MBTA police have gotten COVID-19. I do not think that's going to stop, no matter what. Even if we go to the deep end of the other side of the curve, they have the highest exposure risk. That's something that we have to take into consideration about manpower. I know that everyone complains about the T. I get it. But please do remember that people's lives are on the line, and we've had people can die working on for behalf of you on the MBTA and other government services. They're working on behalf of you and putting their life on the line as well. So we'll see how it goes. A lot of the stuff we're doing is kind of a day-by-day as we go along, and we'll have other major service issues like Medicare, Medicaid. There'll be an uptick of that because of unemployment has risen. The unemployment trust fund I talked about has taken a huge impact because of the expansion of the program. We're going to see more need for SNAP food stamp services coming down the pipe also. So when we need the most is when we receive the least tax revenue.
Right.
And that's just the reality of where we are.
Yeah.
So people are like, oh, you can cut services. Well, we're probably going to look at furloughs, unfortunately. We're probably looking at some layoffs too. The reality is that every time you lay someone off, it's less person do services that you're asking for. And the reality is the Medicare, Medicaid budget is over 30% of our state budget. And we add another $1 billion to that because of the unemployment rate. You know, that just eats up the other side of direct service we can provide. And I'm not sure how the UMass system is going to continue right now either, because you know, they're going to go virtual programming. And if you're a university that's heavily dependent on international students, you've got a problem, whether it be public or private. Because the idea of having to do a 14-day quarantine, which has not been the official position yet, but I suspect they're going to be talking about quarantine periods, people coming into the country, because going to other countries have a quarantine period already on arrival. You know, that's not a, that adds 14 days more of expenses.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not insignificant. And then you try to go home, that's 14 days on the other side.
Right.
That's a month of your life in quarantine out of 12 months. So, I mean, that's not insignificant for people. So it's going to hamper ability to do business, traveling overseas, going to hamper international students. It's going to kill tourism. Who wants to go visit someplace and spend 14 days in a hotel room?
Right.
And it's just coming here. It's going over there. So certain industries like travel industry, you know, one of our major businesses that we collect tax revenue from them and provide jobs and payroll taxes, it's going to be tough. It includes like livery services, you know, bus tours. I mean, how do you do proper, you know, proper safety on things like bus tours?
Yeah, right here in Quincy, you know, the Adams Park will take a hit. It's not even open yet, so that remains to be seen too.
Absolutely. And of course, conventions and everything else. So a lot of stuff, the T depends on, you know, tourism. The T depends on the convention centers. It's just not, you know, us going to work every day using the T. It's all these other people that come in from out of state, other countries, to go to conferences and tourism and visiting. They use the MBTA as well.
Sure.
So, you know, and so give an idea of this kind of ripple effect on COVID-19, you know, people talk about, you know, travel and all that, but it also includes all the businesses that, you know, use tourism or out-of-state dollars that you don't pay those taxes on because someone else is paying for us. Like car rentals, huge impact on that, affects our tax revenue, impacts their businesses, you know, all that stuff. The Uber drivers, you saw 3,500 people laid off from Uber's administrative headquarters, customer service, because of decline of 50% usage. And ride sharing, again, different kind of public safety issue, which means the cabs companies aren't doing much better.
Right.
You know, the ripple effect of COVID-19 is enormous. And we start really thinking about all these front-facing businesses. And we talked earlier about the phase, where you fit in those phases. It gets pretty crazy, like cell phones. All right. I mean, people like to buy the cell phones online, but I actually like to touch my cell phone and use it before I buy it online.
Right.
And start trying to transfer data. That's a front-facing business. Mm-hmm. And you're touching cell phones. You know, I know Carvana is talking about buying cars online. Great. But, you know, 7-day return policy, you know, that, you know, the car's used as soon as you give it back to them. So it's got to be a catch here.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of trying a car out, you got to go to a dealership or use a car. You have to sanitize the cars. You have to take proper procedures before you can buy or lease the car. Or even a rental car. Are you comfortable getting into a car with a potential virus lingering around? And, you know, those companies have to create sanitation methods to ensure the customer safety.
Right. What do you think about home delivery of marijuana, Jackie? I know that's being tossed around right now.
Yeah, medical marijuana actually does allow home delivery. There is a regulatory process for that. And the Cannabis Control Commission also has a regulatory process for home delivery marijuana. I have to be honest, I'm not up to date on where they are in that. I've not been paying too much attention on home delivery. But I suspect it's something you might have to take a strong look at as part of this. And like pharmaceuticals and other things, you know, the question of course security on the receiving end. For example, my mom receives her cancer medication now because I can't pick it up at Tufts Medical Center in person. The FedEx does need to see someone actually get their meds, confirm it is an adult, confirm it is the place it's supposed to be at.
Right.
So it's very involved. Again, another front-facing business. How do you scan my driver's license? How do you see my driver's license from 6 feet away? Can you confirm that, right? Another front-facing business. So, you know, all forms of delivery, you know, we have to, you know, figure out how to do this. And like I said, the PPE becomes a different issue as well, where, you know, I talked to this with a friend last night, where you got obviously a priority, healthcare workers, hospitals, community health centers, urgent care, EMTs, priority. But then there's the rest of us below the direct impact healthcare workers. Right? Mm-hmm. There's going to be masks, sanitized equipment. I mean, you know, how are we going to get a box of Clorox wipes if you don't have Clorox wipes? What is an acceptable substitute for that? I mean, these are things that all businesses, you know, are dealing with. And I'm sure people at home are looking at their sanitary supplies and challenge finding those things in the stores.
Yeah.
And think about that, plus all these businesses opening up.
Curious to get your take on how this is going to impact the insurance industry. I'm sure you're familiar with the lawsuit filed by Legal Seafoods against their insurer, but you know, in a bigger scheme of things, should insurance companies be helping businesses that have, you know, been affected by this?
Yeah, the insurance industry is not designed for this. I mean, this is not your typical hack of God where it's all really Mother Nature trying to get us in a different way, where you have a tree, a hurricane. You know, even if it's a power line outage, the utility companies have insurance regarding recovery against utility companies. Mm. It isn't like a slip and fall or employee workplace accident issue. This is totally different. And, you know, the issue with Legal Seafoods, if I understand this, and I'm not claiming I understand this, if I understand based on what I saw in a news report, it's regarding what defines as act of God type mm-hmm. situation and an exemption specifically for pandemics or medically related things like this. So, you know, unfortunately, you actually have to look at your insurance contract and determine whether or not the contract actually covers this type of circumstance. I'm going to bet most of us would not think about this because none of us could have ever anticipated this type of medical situation.
Right.
Because insurance companies are trying to anticipate things that they will have to pay out for. This is something that anyone saw. So a lot of stuff is still going to be directly related between the consumer and the industry via contract. Whether the state or federal government's going to get involved in this, I can't speak to that right now. I do not know. But we'll see how it plays out. Same thing on refunds. The Attorney General has reminded everybody that always work with the person in the refunds. You know, try to do your best. It is partially contract driven as well. We have a contract, the different tickets and refund policy works. And I think we get it. I mean, I think we all get this. I mean, if you already prepaid for something, that you got a business that depends on rotating dollars to maintain their business, meaning that every function pays basically sets up the next function, mm-hmm. or every ticket sets up the next ticket, you know, in the rotating business. And now that business rotation has stopped, but their expenses didn't.
Right.
There's a struggle between consumers' rights on non-service refund, and the other side's problem is that while they do recognize the non-service refund issue, on the other side, they were using, their business requires them to keep floating money through to maintain the payroll, rent, utilities. And it's hard. I just don't have an answer for anybody. It's like, sure. This is not a winnable situation for either side.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would strongly just to suggest to follow Attorney General's advice and try to work best with the person in dispute, whether it be the business or the consumer, to try to see if you can reach some reasonable ground.
Sure. Do you think, Tacky, that can the state's unemployment system sustain what it's going through right now?
No.
That's period.
The economists from earlier March told us that the unemployment payout on a trust fund is about, I think, $1.4 trillion. Bigger number, over $4 trillion to pay payroll. Give you an idea of the size of payroll in the state. The trust fund had $1.7 trillion. So we got a problem.
Yeah.
And yes, well, how come it's not enough money? Well, let me explain how come there wasn't enough money. One, the way the unemployment trust fund works is that as the economy gets better, the payment by employers and employee payroll taxes go up.
Mm-hmm.
So as kind of proves your payroll goes up, it goes into trust fund. The legislature has consistently frozen the schedule rate for increasing that tax on employees, because the economy's good. People feel that, you know, they're being taxed too much, because they don't hear anybody say they're not taxed too much, and it inhibits their business because it hurts them, because they're growing and more taxes only hurt them. So you should not increase the fund. Well, this is what happens when you don't pay your share higher during the bad times, the good times, because now we hit the bad times and the fund isn't big. That being said, the feds also expanded the program to self-employed contract workers, gig workers, part-time workers, workers that got employed but didn't pay the fund yet.
Right.
All those people never paid the unemployment trust fund ever. Or they didn't have enough time to pay into it because they were hired and then terminated.
Right.
So as a result, a portion of that is also, a big portion of that is also related to folks that have never paid in the system that now the state has to figure out to pay for. So the rough estimates, like 57-60% of all people participating in unemployment fall in the traditional system, 40%-ish, give or take 5% or so, do not fall into the traditional system, means they never paid into the system. Is it an important policy to do this? Absolutely, because of the nature of this pandemic is not like any other economic crisis. Yes, we should be doing this. So what is the solution? Well, the state's going to have to engage in long-term borrowing with the federal government to pay for unemployment trust fund. It's been done before. It's not new. But the volume of this amount is the biggest I think ever seen since we've trust fund. The federal government could step up and try to forgive portions of that trust fund debt. But right now the plan is to borrow against the federal government to fill the unemployment trust fund and then bake that into our future budget as part of our debt cost. That is the current solution.
Mm-hmm.
They said the federal government decides to provide more financial assistance to the states, that will change how we go about doing that. So, these policies were necessary. We're going to short that cost. But again, like I said, it's a combination of issues regarding, you know, getting people to put more money into the trust fund when times are good. And then obviously we couldn't anticipate the federal expansion program.
Right. Yeah. I'm curious, Techie, are you concerned at all about the way New England as a whole is kind of reopening? It seems to be kind of a patchwork array of processes. There was talk at one time of New England kind of teaming up and you know, having a one main opening strategy, but now it seems to have splintered off into individual states.
Yeah, I got this question yesterday too from neighbors about this. The governor's plan largely revolves around coordinated efforts to know what everyone's doing,
yeah,
not that we all could put them together at the same time.
Okay.
All states do not have the same pandemic level or crisis level. We're all in crises, but it's all different levels. All states don't have the same testing. We're like I said over and over again, we're probably one of the easily highest testers in the world. We're one of the highest in the country. And that gives us better data to let us start mapping our projections and figure out our reopening. And, you know, watching other states do this gives an idea whether or not we should and should not do either, sadly.
Right.
We really should not. Looking at other people's suffering to determine what we're going to do. We really shouldn't. But this is the reality we're in now. And again, the balance between, right, we talk about the unemployment trust fund, where people get to work, get them off the trust fund, you know, people start getting some mental health normality and get the economy moving again of what we will need. We get all that. But if your customers are dying or severely ill, well, that doesn't help your economy either.
Right.
Yeah, people who are in a hospital bed cannot pay for your services. It puts a strain on the system. This is why I say it's a lot of personal responsibility. So as we look at other states around us, and the governor has his four-phase plan, you know, I think, you know, we're going to implement slowly. It's less about opening together. It's about informing each other what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Salem, New Hampshire is on the board of Essex County. A lot of commuting back and forth. Everyone in South Coast knows that they travel back and forth between here and Rhode Island. So, you know, interstate commerce is a big part of all our economies. People travel across state lines all the time. to do business and retail and shop and whatnot. And, you know, what is that impact going to be as this disease has no borders?
Right.
So it's more about informing each other about what's going on, so be better prepared about what may happen next. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, in the New England states, we all have a, I won't say identical, but similar philosophy. We'll go in slow, we'll do things one at a time, see how it works out, and, you know, play it, unfortunately, play it by a degree of ear, so to speak, as you know, we try to maximize safety potential while we'll also try to get people back to work.
Yeah. Anything else we should touch on, do you think, today?
Well, I want to remind everybody, because the U.S. Census again.
Sure.
We're doing good. We're doing good. We're just under 60% reporting, according to the U.S. Census website. We're doing well, but we still have a ways to go. The data collection will continue until October, the extended deadline for data collection and census, so there's still plenty of time.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we crack 100,000 people in Quincy. It changes our federal HUD formula, so we get more financial assistance if we crack 100,000 people, so it's crucial, as well as other demographic data that maps out our future funding and future planning for our residents, and also, obviously, our immigrant, you know, population is part of our residency, so, you know, services for them, as well as senior citizens and projection for kids for schools and, you know, transportation roads, because, you know, how many people are going to, you know, grow up over the next time period based on projection gives an idea of how much transportation need and education needs there are. So it's a very broad range of issues. So it's really important to fill out the census. And secondly, you know, good amount of plug to Asian American Pacific Islander Month. Last night, I know this is not going to be here till later, and people could have missed this, but last night they started a documentary on PBS called Asian Americans. The first two parts was last night. Today's Tuesday, 11th. The next three parts are tonight. But you go to PBS's website, they have a number of different shorts regarding Asian Americans' contributions and challenges in the United States that I encourage everybody to take a chance to look at if you would like to, at the PBS website. And just search for Asian Americans, they'll come up. So a couple little plugs at the end of today's talk.
Sure, happy to do that. Yeah, how would folks reach out to you, Tacky? What's some good ways for them to do that?
As always, reach out at the office at 617-722-1494, 617-722-1494. Hit any staffer and just leave a message. We'll be checking a voicemail regularly. They do report to me about who's calling in and what's going on. You can, of course, email at tacky.chan at mahouse.gov, mahous.gov, tacky.chan at mahouse.gov. You can look at my Facebook site. I do not encourage people to reach me through Facebook. The other mediums are much more secure and easier for me to find. But, I mean, we post a lot of information up there as well as on my website that may not need you to call me if you're looking for certain pieces of information.
Okay.
So that may speed up the response for some issues if you're looking for a phone number or trying to get updated what's going on. The governor's website. Sorry, the state website has a lot of information on there on COVID-19, as well as the legislation website regarding current activity. So if you're just looking for some phone numbers or not, obviously you can there's other mediums you can use. We do encourage people to look at that those mediums to try to get updates.
Okay, great. Good to talk to you. Hopefully we can do it in person again soon, but in the meantime, this will suffice.
Well, I hope to always see you in person, and you're right. We'll keep doing this, and we'll contact you very soon, and we'll continue these little chats.
Okay. Thanks so much, Tacky. Be well.
You too. Be well. Be safe.